You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're looking at recent changes now to Wisconsin Medicaid and what's on the horizon. A couple items we're going to touch on here. Work requirements for Medicaid recipients are delayed until next month. And then gender-conforming surgery, that's now covered. And we'll also get into some other big health issues for Wisconsinites, like how to afford insulin. So what questions do you have about Medicaid in Wisconsin, also known as Badger Care? Do you or a family member receive health care through Medicaid? How do you think the new work requirements will affect your coverage? What do you think of Medicaid coverage as a whole here in Wisconsin? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. David Wahlberg is a health and medicine reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. David, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Good to be here.
So earlier this fall, in October, I think it was, the state legislature's Joint Finance Committee voted to delay implementing these work requirements for Medicaid. They pushed the deadline back first to November, then now it looks like to the end of January. Where are we at with this?
Yeah, so Governor Scott Walker, previous governor, had proposed this requirement that childless adults on Medicaid work or train for a job in order to continue receiving coverage. That was approved just before last year's gubernatorial election, and it was set to begin November 1st of this year. But it has been delayed. The State Department of Health Services asked the legislature for a delay, and they granted it. And so as of now, as far as I know, the plan is to begin this January 30th.
So as I understand it, it looks like Wisconsin and South Carolina are the two states here who didn't expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, but are able to put in these work requirements. Is that right?
Yeah, I know Wisconsin is one of about a dozen or 14 states that didn't expand Medicaid, South Carolina being another one. Yeah, it may be the fact that they're the only two that didn't do that and then are also trying to do this.
So does Wisconsin face any challenges that could delay implementation further?
Well, there are roughly nine states that have had Medicaid work requirements approved by the federal government, but basically, essentially none of them have really gotten the programs going, largely because of litigation. One of the first states to approve it was Kentucky, and there were lawsuits against that program, and a judge essentially delayed that or sort of threw it out temporarily. And then because of other lawsuits or just the threat of lawsuits, most of the states have held off on getting this going, or for example, Indiana started it, but then kind of halted it because of that.
Do we know how many Wisconsinites would be affected by these new work requirements?
So if you look at Medicaid overall, there's about 1.2 million residents, which is about one in five people in Wisconsin that are on some form of Medicaid. But some of those are just sort of partial coverage, like senior care, which helps people buy prescription drugs. The sort of core group of people on Medicaid are on Badger Care. That's about 750,000 people. And of those, about 150,000 are childless adults or adults who don't have any dependent children. Initially, this requirement, this work requirement, and there's a few other aspects to it, some new premiums they would have to pay and co-payments for some ER visits. Initially, those things applied just to childless adults, but the idea, at least with the Walker administration, I believe, was to eventually have it apply to other people on Badger Care, too.
Do you anticipate further delays on these work requirements?
I think that's the key question right now, and I don't know the answer to that. whether Wisconsin might further delay this because of any threat of litigation, or whether there are people at the ready to sue if Wisconsin goes forward with it. I'm not sure, but that's going to be the question to ask as we enter January and get closer to the January 30th implementation date.
Talking with David Wahlberg, he's a health and medicine reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal. You can join in. Do you have a need for gender-confirming surgery? Do you plan on or having that covered by Medicaid, also known as Badger Care? What questions do you have about recent court actions? Join in, 800-642-1234. So Wisconsin chose not to appeal a court decision that would require Medicaid to cover gender-confirming surgery. This is a surgery to address gender dysphoria. When must Medicaid start paying for these surgeries? What's going on here?
Yeah, so Wisconsin was one of about 10 states where the Medicaid program did not cover gender-confirming surgery for transgender people on Medicaid. And early last year, a couple recipients of Medicaid who were seeking that kind of surgery sued the state over this. And last year, a judge initially had an initial ruling ordering the state to allow the coverage. And then this August, there was kind of a final ruling by the judge making the state cover this surgery for people on Medicaid. And then just this month, the state essentially said it wouldn't appeal and announced a settlement by which they basically have to inform people of this coverage now if they're interested, even retroactively.
So if they've been denied in the past, that basically that they have to now be told that they now may be eligible for the surgery.
Right. Yep. That's what the part of the settlement.
Do we know how many people this would affect?
I think the estimate is that there's about 5,000 people on Medicaid thought to be transgender, but it would only be likely a small portion of that group that would actually get surgery, because first of all, not all transgender people desire this kind of surgery. And then even among those who do, it does have to be considered medically necessary by therapists and doctors before people can move forward on it.
Did we see estimated costs to the state?
I think the ranges for the Medicaid coverage were something like $300,000 to $1.2 million a year, you know, based on not knowing exactly how many people would pursue this. And that sounds like a fair amount of money, and it is, but if you look at the overall budget, I think the judge said the sum is something like infinitesimally immaterial, or actuarially immaterial is the term he used.
Otherwise known as like a drop in the bucket.
Right. Decimal dust or whatever. Yeah.
We're with Wisconsin State Journal health reporter David Wahlberg looking at a number of health issues hitting home for people in our state, including the cost of insulin. Are you a diabetic who takes insulin? How have you seen costs change? Has it change the way you treat your diabetes? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment, more health conversation with David Wahlberg here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're looking at recent health policy issues here in Wisconsin. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than 30 million Americans have diabetes, and state and federal lawmakers have introduced legislation to make insulin more affordable for the millions of Americans who rely on this life-saving drug to regulate blood sugar. Is the cost of your insulin stable, or is it going up? Have you had to ration your insulin? Are you between insurance wondering, how do I pay for my meds? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. David Wahlberg stays with us. He's a health and medicine reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. David, insulin prices, as you've been writing about, they are going up. You talked with a number of people, some people paying upwards of $1,000 a month. What is going on?
Yeah, so the price of insulin, which many diabetics need to live, went up threefold in the last decade or so, and then again doubled. So it's been going up quite a bit. Nobody knows exactly why that is, but this is affecting patients. Even if they have insurance coverage, oftentimes they have to pay quite a bit out of pocket before they can get the coverage. And then after that, they still have some co-payments to pay. And then sometimes, as with some of the cases I recently wrote about, if you're, for example, 26 and getting off your parents' insurance and going on to your own insurance, you might face a plan that doesn't cover one type of insulin, forcing you to switch, and that can have problems.
Yeah, and you talked to a number of people who are trying to get by and trying to make ends meet and buy their insulin. How are they coping with the people you talked with?
Yeah, well, one woman I talked to who was 26, she had a deductible of $3,600, so, and she was faced with having to pay $600 a month out of pocket for insulin. She ended up buying insulin from Canada for about $100 a month. And so that was kind of one route. But another example in my story involved another 26-year-old, and he went on his insurance from work, which covered a different kind of insulin than the one he was accustomed to. It didn't work very well for him. And he was faced with paying about $1,400 out of pocket for his insulin. He ended up going into a diabetic coma and died from this about a year ago.
Well, let's take a call on this. Chris is joining us from Toma. Hi, Chris.
Hi there.
What is your situation with insulin?
Well, I'm a special education teacher with two masters. I have four boys, and I've been diabetic since 98. I cannot afford my insulin at all. I take metformin, which makes me extremely sick to my stomach. I have bad side effects from it, but that's my option. And actually, I just went to the doctor because I'm having so many problems that I now have to go up in, I'm 45, I will be going in for an MRI to see if I'm having mini stroke.
Oh, my goodness.
And I still can't afford my insulin. And so when I hear that we're going to let have transgenders do this and we're going to let all these, I hate badger care because so, I see so many people who abuse it.
Well, and Chris, I want to ask you first, how have you talked with your physician about access to insulin and affordability? What has your physician said?
She gives me as many samples as she can.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm not the only one. You can't give me all the samples they get. There are programs out there, but they only last for a short time. Like, they'll give you maybe a month free. And, you know, even to monitor my blood sugars, I don't do that. I can't afford the strip. And it's frustrating when I work every day and and this is just the truth, is that if I quit my job right now with four boys, I could get everything paid for my medical, and I won't do that because I am able to work.
Chris, thank you so much for calling in with your situation. David Wahlberg, you know, as you listen to Chris's situation there, getting samples and not affording strips, where do we go from here?
Yeah, and that's an interesting point because it's not just insulin. It's also some of the supplies that people need. Well, you know, there are some bills that are aimed at addressing some of this. At the state level, a bill in play would cap out-of-pocket costs at $100 a month for people with insurance. Of course, that doesn't help people who don't have insurance. But that's something being looked at by the legislature. And then at the federal level, one bill would basically incentivize manufacturers of insulin to bring prices back to their 2006 prices. That might help people. Also, the House just this past week voted on an overall bill that would allow negotiation with Medicare and aimed at lowering drug prices overall, which would include insulin. And the Trump administration just announced a plan to encourage importation of drugs from other countries like Canada. So, you know, how much these things would help is not clear.
Is this the Insulin Affordability Data Collection Act?
That's another one. I didn't quite mention that one yet.
Yeah.
That one was introduced by Senator Tammy Baldwin here in Wisconsin and others last month. And that's basically asking the government to study closer how much it costs, the medical costs of people rationing insulin because of the high cost.
Okay. Yeah. Let's take another call now. Chris in Adams. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I'm elderly disabled, and I was on Medicaid. It worked perfectly fine. I never had a problem with a physician or getting access or anything. About a couple of months, well, maybe like 6 months before the gubernatorial election between Scott Walker and Tony Evers, I got a great big package of stuff in the mail telling me that I was required to pick an HMO, and I immediately bristled. There were big companies involved in this, like Blue Cross Blue Shield. And so I called up and tried to squirm out of it, and they told me I couldn't. And so I basically told them to take a walk. Now, what this was campaign contributions flowing into Scott Walker's campaign from these HMOs,
so,
and they're taking away my Medicaid, and I am really angry about it, and I think that this all needs to be ameliorated.
Chris, are you covered right now? What is your coverage like?
No, I don't have any insurance.
You have no insurance.
I have no insurance. I'm not going to sign up with an HMO that was politically driven by somebody running for office. That's just despicable. And so I've just bugged out.
David, do you see that we've really are at the intersection of politics here and health policy as Chris is just opting not to have insurance?
Well, yeah. You know, many people on Medicaid, many managed care companies or HMOs administer Medicaid in Wisconsin. So that has been going on around the state for quite a few years. And I have to say, I'm pretty sure it predates Scott Walker's administration. I think it was going on under Governor Doyle before him. But it may be that I could see the argument that maybe the expansion of that might be related to some of what the caller was talking about. But, you know, I think the bottom line is that is going on around the country, whether it's operated by Democrats or Republicans.
Well, let's move on to dental therapy here. A bipartisan bill landed in the state legislature this year that would allow mid-level providers that are called dental therapists to do things like fill cavities and pull teeth. And supporters, you know, say this legislation is really at, you know, improving access to basic dental care. Can you tell us about where this legislation is at?
Yeah, so there was actually a hearing on this bill yesterday in an assembly Medicaid committee. So the basic idea here is that, especially for people who are on Medicaid, like we've been talking about, it can be really difficult to find a dentist who will see them. And the dentist would say that's because the state doesn't reimburse them enough for treating Medicaid patients. But that leaves a lot of people on Medicaid not getting dental care, which can lead to all sorts of other problems. So dental therapists exist in Minnesota and I believe in Alaska. And so this bill in Wisconsin would bring them here. They're sort of a mid-level provider, kind of like physician assistants compared to doctors. And they could fill cavities and pull teeth and things like that. The idea would be that they would expand access and cover more of those Medicaid patients. The Wisconsin Dental Association, which represents dentists, is very opposed to this bill and has thus far been able to contain it. And basically, they say they prefer to have higher reimbursements for Medicaid. And they've also proposed a different worker called expanded function dental auxiliaries. And
that's a mouthful.
They're sort of a step below what dental therapists would be, and they prefer that model instead.
Well, David, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be here again. Thank you.
David Wahlberg is a health and medicine reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Coming up, we recap the House's votes last night as President Trump becomes the third president in U.S. history to be impeached. We'll take stock of how Wisconsin's House members responded with Craig Gilbert of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.